The outcome of the war in terms of the political turmoil it will create in the Middle East cannot be predicted.
Then all they have to eat are those MREs. I just don't know how you guys keep going out there.
There were dozens of totally dismembered dead bodies that had been shattered by whatever form of explosive at very close range, and there were dozens of them.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, April 2, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. A Red Cross worker in Baghdad describes a horrific scene of civilian casualties. American servicemen and women are quietly opting out of military service in droves. And the war abroad and the war at home will have a report. But first, these news headlines.
With headlines for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Janaki Lafis.
And I'm Daniel Costello. An Iranian freelance cameraman working for the BBC was killed in Iraq today when he stepped on a landmine as he climbed out of his car. The cameraman, Kavi Golstan, is the fourth journalist known to have died during the conflict. In Seoul, protesters gathered outside the National Assembly to express their opposition to sending Korean troops to the Gulf. President Roh Moo-hun is appealing for the passage of the Troop Dispatch Bill, which would send 600 combat engineers and 100 medics to assist the U.S. The Korea Herald reports that an attempt by more than 1,000 demonstrators to break through to the parliament building was prevented by 7,000 riot police. UNICEF expressed concern today that Iraqi children might mistake yellow food packets being handed out by the U.S.-led forces with small bombs. The color of the food wrapping is identical to that of the airdropped bomblet. UNICEF says children can confuse the ration and unexploded ordnance because of their identical coloring.
In one of the largest Israeli raids in the West Bank city of Tukaram, hundreds of Israeli armored vehicles supported by tanks and military helicopters attacked the city and the adjacent refugee camp. Awa Dibis reports from Ramallah.
Israeli forces imposed a curfew on the city and the camp and then asked all of men between 18 and 40 years old to gather at the school in the camp. According to witnesses, the Israeli army transported around 1,500 men in trucks to the Nur Shams refugees camp, 5 kilometers south of the city of Tulkarem, and ordered them not to go back home for 3 days. Palestinians in Ramallah buried also a 14-year-old boy who died today after being shot by the Israeli army near his village last Friday. Palestinians are afraid since the beginning of the U.S.-led invasion into Iraq of a potential Israeli military escalation in the occupied territories. I'm Awad Davis reporting for Free Speech Radio News, Ramallah.
Senate Republicans have failed for the fourth time to close debate on Miguel Estrada's nomination to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. Josh Chaffin reports from the Capitol.
Democrats say Estrada's nomination to the nation's second highest court won't get a final vote until the Bush nominee answers more of their questions. They also want access to case memos Estrada wrote as a deputy solicitor general. Some of Estrada's old co-workers at the Department of Justice have accused him of interpreting the law to fit his own ideological agenda. His nomination is opposed by many women's groups and the pro-choice movement, and though Estrada would be the first ever Latino on the nation's second highest court, he's also opposed by most Latino interest groups. Today's vote was 55-44, with Democrat John Kerry absent. Republicans need 60 votes to end the debate. Josh Chaffin in the Capitol for Free Speech Radio News.
In Portland, Oregon, a peace encampment has been set up across the street from City Hall. It has lasted since the day the war against Iraq broke out. Andrew Stelzer reports.
Every night, about 10 people sleep on the sidewalk, wrapped in tarps, next to Terry Shrunk Plaza in downtown Portland. The plaza is federal land, the sidewalk is city land, and after some legal negotiations, the encampment has a permit to set up a shelter during the daytime and can sleep on the sidewalk. Todd Kurlewitz, one of the campers, says the encampment takes peaceful protests to a more effective level.
We're kind of setting the precedence for where this national peace movement needs to be going, because they've really found a way to discredit the marches. The media is going to portray the marches as radical groups, pepper spray. That's what the media wants to see. But they've yet to find a way to really slant what we're doing here on the media. It's 100% nonviolent. A lot of community support.
The use of pepper spray on protesters in Portland almost every day since the outbreak of the war has resulted in some negative publicity, and Portland's mayor may see allowing the encampment as a way to get back on the public's good side. For Free Speech Radio News from Portland, Oregon, I'm Andrew Stelzer.
an advocacy group for the homeless, has accepted a settlement in their suit against the New York City Police Department. Ian Forrest reports.
The suit was brought on behalf of the homeless residents of New York City, charging that the police department adopted a policy of arresting rather than assisting homeless New Yorkers. The suit called the department's policy unconstitutional. The settlement requires the police department emphasize to officers that they must equally enforce laws and offer homeless people social services before arresting them. The ruling overturns action, which the group maintains was inhumane and biased against their members who suffered arrest as they slept on park benches and in other public spaces. Mike Slater, a member and leader of the organization, is pleased with the agreement.
They were told that they have to read a directive, and every officer has to be given a copy of this directive. And basically, the directive just states that, you know, you can't think up a reason to arrest a homeless person.
For FSRN, I am Ian Forrest.
From Community Radio KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jonica Lafice.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. An American missile identified from the remains of its serial number was pinpointed yesterday as the cause of the explosion at a Baghdad market on Friday night that killed at least 62 Iraqi civilians. The codes on the foot-long shrapnel shard seen by the independent correspondent Robert Fisk at the scene of the bombing in the Shu'el district came from a weapon manufactured in Texas by Raytheon, the world's biggest producer of the so-called smart bombs. The identification of the missile as American is an embarrassing blow to Washington and London as they try to match their promises of minimal civilian casualties with the reality of precision bombing. Both governments have suggested the Shu'el bombing and explosion at another Baghdad market that killed at least 14 people last Wednesday were caused by aging Iraqi anti-aircraft missiles. Reports are starting to emerge from Iraq of hundreds of civilian casualties in towns and cities outside Baghdad, the Nasiriya, where there are 250 recorded deaths, mostly civilians, and the town of Hilya, 70 miles south of Baghdad. The BBC reported that members of the International Committee of the Red Cross team witnessed a vehicle transporting the bodies of men and women and children to a hospital in Hilla. Peacewatch spoke to Red Cross spokesman Lolan Huganin Benjamin today, who is stationed in central Baghdad, about conditions in Baghdad and the reports of mounting civilian casualties.
More than half a dozen buildings of telephone exchanges in all residential areas of the cities have been totally flattened out by missiles. And of course, people living in the vicinity are likely to come in harm's way. There have been definite cases in which purely private property has been hit. You have probably seen the pictures in the media. There are a number of private homes that have been totally destroyed by what has been termed in 91 collateral damage. So this is what we have seen in Baghdad for the past 2 weeks.
Now, what do you mean collateral damage? They were not directly targeted, but they were affected by the reverberations of the force of the missiles. Is that what you mean by collateral damage?
Well, in many cases, yes. It's obvious that some buildings next to the targets have been hit, but there are also very clear cases in which buildings which are not right next to a target were damaged or were destroyed. There have been quite a few cases in which purely private homes and completely residential homes have been destroyed, and they have been reported in the world media. So this is what might be termed collateral damage.
Now, I know that you're in Baghdad, but we're seeing reports from the BBC that in Nasiriya and Halal, there were over 250 deaths. Have you heard anything about that report? And if so, what can you tell us?
I called the thing in Hilla a horror, because it is a horror. We have expressed serious concern through the past days about the situation in the cities between Basra and Baghdad. There are many cities there, Najaf and Karbala and Samawa and Nasiriya. All of them have now been included in the combat zone, and there has been no possibility of gaining access there. no news people have been going there, and we also, as the only international humanitarian organization present in the country at this stage, we have not been able to go there because of the danger. So yesterday we sent a team, there was one surgeon and one sanitary engineer, went to Hela. And when they got to the hospital, they found out the following. The hospital has a capacity of 280 beds. It was absolutely overflowing with serious cases of wounds, of wounded people. The exact number is difficult to tell, but it's definitely much above 300. The hospital was absolutely packed. They had sent people to the maternity in Hela, which was also packed. So it was hundreds of people. Most of them, a large number, were women and very young children. All of them had very, very serious wounds, which is completely different from what I was telling you earlier about the impact of explosives we have found in Baghdad. So far, this is as far as I can go. It will need an investigation, definitely, mm-hmm. and a ballistic study on the nature of those wounds. All these people were hit directly, and many had extremely serious wounds. Our own doctor, who has been a war surgeon for all his life, was absolutely shattered by what he saw. Young kids of 2-3 years old who had lost arms and legs were practically going to be, of course, handicapped for life, and everybody was in terrible condition. On top of it, there were dozens of totally dismembered dead bodies, piled up pieces and bits and pieces of human bodies that had been shattered by whatever form of explosive at very close range, and there were dozens of them. So this is what we have called a horror. It's completely different from what we have witnessed in Baghdad.
Is this city home to any sort of military facilities that might have been targeted? I know you said that an investigation needs to be done, but what is your suspicion as to what might have happened?
Well, these people all came from a village, actually. They were taken to the hospital in the city, but they came from the countryside, from a rural area where people are peasants, basically. Growing their land, and they have cattle. It's a completely rural area. So there are lots of questions raised as to why this rural area was hit in that particular way. Actually, the survivors, many of them are the only survivors of whole families. There are small kids who are in very, very terrible physical condition, and they have lost absolutely their whole family. There are no fathers, no mothers, no brothers around, just one survivor, and survivor per family in many cases. And all of them were in total shock, as you can imagine, and just think, why us? Why is this part of the country? Why is this village? What's wrong? What was so important about it? Why should it be hit in that way? As far as we could go witnessing the people in that situation. But they were definitely victim of explosions at very close range, all the hundreds of them.
And to your knowledge, there were no military targets in the city?
It's a rural area, a village and green land around it. So it's very, very difficult to imagine. Of course, there will be explanation. Our position is not to investigate the military strategy, of course, but I'm sure that that particular case will be the source of investigations and probably controversy in the coming days. I heard today during the press conference that was given by the American general who speaks on behalf of the Pentagon, I heard him on BBC World Service today, and a clear question was put to him about that case, and he made it clear that it would have to be looked into further, and he would not comment directly about that specific case right now.
Have you seen anything that you would consider to be a direct targeting of civilians, either in Baghdad or any of the other cities that you've been visiting?
Well, that case in Hela is an absolutely clear case of direct targeting of civilians. There were no military amongst them. We have seen that military people who were wounded in the same region over the past days, they were in a different place, and they were not suffering the same type of wound. They were, and they were a very small number of them. So this, the case that these were mainly women and children is very odd and needs to be explained.
How are you holding up?
I don't know. I've spent a long part of my life in war countries. I think that Baghdad now is a very sad place for people. I've been here, of course, I was familiar with that country for the past 18 years. I've come here a lot, and I've launched projects. I've worked closely with people here. What I find very difficult is the way this whole issue is dealt with in the West. Even when I go back, I've lived in the U.S., I've lived in many European countries. It's as if Iraq was described as a totally negative monolith. That's not the case. Iraqi people are just like everybody else around the world. I've kept telling news guys who were calling about Iraq even before the war, telling them it's 20 million, 23 million people. I mean, 23 million dads and moms and kids. I mean, Iraqi people are not monsters. And I find it very hard the way the thing is presented in Western media currently, as if it was some kind of piece of empty land or desert that is fought about for whatever reason. I do not believe that the Iraqi people are presented as human beings, and that's what I find very hard, much more than I made a decision about coming here. I cannot complain about my present position. But I find it very hard that the Iraqi people are not really given a chance of speaking up for themselves and being acknowledged for what they are outside.
Is there anything I've left out?
I believe very much that this global confrontation between two worlds is not leading to anything positive. I feel very, very sorry for what's going on, both for our world and for this world.
Okay.
I think we are set on the wrong track, but this is purely personal judgment.
Lolan Huganin Benjamin, spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, speaking with us from Baghdad. As casualties continue to mount in Baghdad and throughout Iraq, scenes of bombed-out marketplaces and other civilian areas are doing little to aid the American claims of liberating the people of Iraq. Peace Watch commentators Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen say that all of this is not without historical precedent, and that Iraqis have good reason to be distrustful of what they perceive as their latest colonizers.
Almost 86 years to the day, the British commander, Lieutenant General Stanley Maude, issued a proclamation to the people of Baghdad, whose city his forces had just occupied. "Our armies," he declared, "do not come as conquerors, but as liberators." Within 3 years, 10,000 Iraqis had died in a national uprising against the British rulers, who had gassed and bombed the insurgents. On the eve of the recent U.S. and British invasion of Iraq, Lieutenant Colonel Tim Collins echoed Maude in a speech to the British troops, "We go to liberate, not to conquer." But the Iraqis see otherwise. Instead of a shower of rice and rose petals, the British and U.S. forces are meeting strong resistance.
Bloodied but still unbowed, Baghdad prepares to fight, writes Patrick Graham on March 30th in The Observer. Baghdad is now prepared for the siege, the city almost unrecognizable from even a week ago. Throughout the city, the population prepares to resist. The residents say that there are severed heads and limbs and brains of the victims all over the streets. They are prepared to resist to the end. And the Arab press is predicting a bloodbath, according to the Washington Post on March 29th. Arab columnists are sounding alarms of bloodbaths and massacre, and the population is responding. In an editorial in Cairo's Daily Al-Haram, Anis Mansour stated, "The world watches the war in Iraq. We are witnessing a bloody tragedy, a savage giant destroying an innocent creature to punish it for sins it did not commit." And indeed, the leader of the Shiites, in opposition to Saddam Hussein, Salim Mashkour, and al-Nahar, referring to a statement by Mohammed Bakir Hakim, the head of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, the main Shiite opposition, resist the United States, resist this invasion, it is a war of aggression, defend the nation, fight and resist to the end. And indeed, outrage spreads in the Arab world, a shuddering sense of outrage at President Bush. Monstrous martyrdom in Baghdad, a huge headline in al-Dastur, dreadful massacre in Baghdad, Egypt's mass circulation, Akbar al-Yom, yet another massacre by the coalition of invaders, the main headline in Saudi Arabia's popular Al-Iraad daily.
House to house, village by village, U.S. Marines destroying, going in, ripping apart, devastating house by house. A harmless-looking home can be a hornet's nest, according to the 7th Marine Regiment's Bravo Company. We had a great day, said Sergeant Schrumpf, 28 years old, one of the 5th Marine Regiment sharpshooters in Diwayena. We killed a lot of people. I'm sorry, the sergeant said, referring to one Iraqi woman that he had recently shot down, but the chick was in the way.
As Colonel Hackworth stated on CNN, we are back to Vietnam. We have to destroy Iraq in order to save it. We are resisted by a guerrilla force, by a population, by a nation in arms. This will not end soon. We will not succeed. This is Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen.
Just what it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Half of one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out wondered. God damn it, trying to make it real compared to what suck it to me.
McCann and Eddie Harris compared to what? Colin Powell leaves Turkey this evening with the promise of a written document from Turkish officials allowing for ground transport of fuel from Turkey to U.S. troops being airlifted to northern Iraq. The document will also explicitly state the United States will not station any additional troops on Turkish soil. From Ankara, Aaron Glantz and Easy Saratas reports.
Turkey's Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül stands shoulder to shoulder with Colin Powell in front of his official residence in one of Ankara's fanciest neighborhoods. More than 90% of Turks oppose George Bush's war in Iraq and support the Turkish parliament's refusal to allow America to launch a northern invasion of Iraq from Turkish soil. But this day, Gül wants to stress his government's support of the war. Here are his opening remarks.
Herkesin takip ettiği gibi.
As everyone knows, Turkey is part of the coalition, and the cooperation that has taken place is under the terms of our Constitution. You all know about the decision to allow overflights of coalition airplanes over Turkey, and the cooperation within this framework will continue with the United States.
Today, Gül promised additional help to the U.S. military in the form of supply lines of food and fuel, which will be allowed to pass through Turkey on their way to Kurdish-controlled northern Iraq. The U.S. military has already airlifted more than 1,000 Special Forces troops into northern Iraq, but if more are to be sent, they will need a way to get supplies. And since Syria and Iran are out of the question, the only way is through Turkey. Gül said he has no plans to take the new agreement to the Turkish parliament, where such an agreement could face a tough fight, or to the people. A few hundred protesters turned out to a hastily called demonstration in front of the office of the Turkish prime minister. The chants range from Colin Powell, get out of our country, murderer Powell, get out of our country, to the ever-popular Yankee, go home. Ishmael Sadek is president of Ankara's teachers' union.
If we are not able to stop the American and British attack on Iraq, it is clear from Powell's declarations that before coming to our country, the next turn will be Syria, then Iran, and the next will be Turkey. The whole Middle East is in the target of the terrorist USA.
But Colin Powell has something he continues to dangle powerfully in front of the Turkish government for its support for the war. Money. Money that will likely only be approved by Congress if Turkey shows more support for the war.
We talked about the request that the president has put into the supplemental for $1 billion to serve as an indication of America's willingness to provide support to Turkey to take any of the economic shock that might come from this current situation out of their economic system, something for them not to have to worry about, because we'll be able to provide some assistance through the supplemental.
But the damage to the Turkish economy from this war will likely be far more than $1 billion. Most observers estimate the economic losses to Turkey after George Bush Sr.'s war at more than $100 billion. Cem Somal is an economics professor at Middle East Technical University. He's worried Turkey's support for the war will permanently damage Turkey's trade relations with Iran and the Arab world, which he says are more significant than the $30 billion aid package the Bush administration offered for a full ground invasion.
The outcome of the war, in terms of the political turmoil it will create in the Middle East, cannot be predicted. Turkey's relations with the other Arab countries, what will happen to Iraq, all of these are big unknowns. And so it is possible that in the long run, Turkey could suffer damages which are difficult to measure in economic terms, but which might have also economic implications in spite of what the United States might offer.
Colin Powell left Turkey this afternoon on his way to Belgium, where he'll be meeting with another reluctant ally. The Belgian government has suggested a new defense pact with France and Germany to form a core Europe willing to stand up to the United States. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz with Ezgi Sertaş in the Turkish capital, Ankara.
Here on Peace Watch, we've been closely monitoring mainstream media coverage of the war, and we've found ourselves a bit disappointed. It seems that some of the reporters embedded within the military ranks are a bit chummy with the forces they're supposed to be objectively covering, and honest, in-depth news reporting is sometimes turning into fluff journalism. Members of the radio satire group, the Christmas Coup Comedy Players, have also been monitoring media coverage, and they present this sampling of a recent news broadcast.
We interrupt this program to take you live to late-breaking commercial media coverage of the invasion of Iraq. Reporting live from the front lines, Clark Spaniel.
Then all they have to eat are those MREs. I just don't know how you guys keep going out there.
Well, the meals are actually pretty good. MREs are, of course, the military food. This is prepackaged food. And the menus are improved. In fact, they've improved them for the last time I had them, which was in Afghanistan. Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, this is what we're talking about here as we hold up item number A. And this one is chicken with noodles. It's not a favorite of mine, not a favorite of the group. But they've also improved them with such things as vanilla cappuccino that you get, or strawberry and chocolate milkshakes and vanilla milkshakes. So they have, and I'm sorry, my cameraman Scotty's reminding me of the number one big hit that is new on the menu, a hamburger, which is essentially two slices of sort of wheat bread and a hamburger patty that goes in the middle, and you get barbecue sauce and then smother it with cheese spread.
Oh.
And by golly, when you've been out here for a while, it's pretty good.
Thank you, Clark Spaniel, in bed with the U.S. invasion forces in Iraq. Now back to your relevant scheduled programming.
The Christmas Coup Comedy Players from Pacifica Stations KPFT in Houston and WBAI in New York. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. We'll be back in a moment.